On today's show, we have one of the most familiar voices in Rochester radio and television. If you listen to WHAM radio, if you watched Channel 8, and before that, Channel 5 even, in the 1960s and the 1970s, you know the name Ann Keefe. She went on to a phenomenal career in St. Louis at the mighty KMOX, and just about a year ago, she came back home to Rochester. And we are honored to have Ann as our guest in the studio today. Hi, Ann.
Hi, thank you.
So good to have you here. I feel almost intimidated because really you're the one who should be doing this. You're the pro.
Oh, I'm the oldest, that's for sure.
You've been at it for a long time. We were talking before the show got started about your beginnings in television and before that in radio in Rochester. And you started at WHAM radio before there even was television.
That's exactly right. You know, I was thinking about coming on this show, Scott, and I thought, what's a connecting theme, sort of? And I thought, it has to do with history and good luck. I just was at the right place at the right time as history evolved in this business, and in the country, for that matter. I was born 1925. That was a year after World War I when women had learned that they could get a paycheck and come home and say, wait a minute, I'm contributing to this household. I have something to say. It was the flapper era.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was a school teacher. My mother and father were both school teachers. But in 1925, do you know you couldn't be a woman school teacher? Only men could teach school if they were married.
If they were married.
If they were married, yes. So, of course, I couldn't be around. So my grandparents, who were just let me do anything I wanted to, raised me for a while. Then I came to Rochester to boarding school. That was a lucky break. Sacred Heart Convent on Prince Street. The most sophisticated, brilliant women were teachers. There was nothing for me to do. I came at 8, and there was nothing to do except read. So I read everything in their library. So I became very educated through no fault of my own. I just happened to be what was available. Then after that, I went to college here at the U of R. It was the war years. The boys were gone.
Mm-hmm.
Girls could run the newspaper. Girls could run the drama club. They had a big influence because the guys were gone. So that was lucky. I edited a paper, and I edited a yearbook, and I did it all. So that was just pure luck. While I was at the U of R, WHAM called my drama coach and said, I need a female who can scream. They did a program at that time called True Stories of the New York State Police. So she said, well, I've got a screamer, and send me out.
And this was, we should, you know, for listeners, this was when there was live drama going on at local radio stations
live
all
drama.
Over the country.
Oh, yeah. We had the symphony played here on WHAM. We had True Stories in New York State. We had Sibley's put on a show every day that Louise Wilson wrote and produced. And if you wrote a script or appeared in it, you got $7. That was the fee. Well, it didn't seem like much, but it was more allowance than I was getting when I was in college, so I took the job. So I was on when I was, I went to college at 16, so I was 17, 18 maybe, when I was screaming for the New York State Police. Later, they hired me to produce that show, but I'd made those contacts as a kid with WHAM.
And that show went out beyond Rochester, too. That was heard in other cities, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes it was. And one time I got arrested for speeding around Sodas, New York, and I said to the trooper, I know Captain, I don't mind, Cuddlemeyer. And he said, you do? And I said, yes, I do. I thought that would get me out of the ticket. And he said, that's interesting because he died 20 years ago. It turns out that these New York State police stories were taken out of old files. So I got a ticket for speeding, I had to have to admit. But anyhow, that was my inroad through just nothing except the times. And now the war comes along. We've got, as I say, men not only out of college, but also when I go to look for a job, there are lots of jobs open. The guys still aren't back. It was an open market, and I already had this in at WHAM. So I went to work there. Then I worked for a year in Buffalo doing advertising, which I also like doing. If you could write in those days and be a voice, you were in pretty good shape. Now, we never had to do engineering, which you guys have to do now. We always had boardmen, engineers, producers, you know. Now you fellows have to do it all. I feel sorry, because I could never do it, push all the right buttons. So then when television came along, in 48 maybe, oh, also I married a boy named Bob Keefe, and he and I had a husband and wife show.
Another very well-known name in Rochester broadcasting history.
Right, and that was just at the time when husband and wife shows were hot. So that was another big piece of luck.
The Fitzgeralds, I think, were New York. Was it Ed and Peggy and Fitzgerald?
Peggy and Fitzgerald, yeah. That's right. That was the new motif. So we went to, Wham was interested in keeping its clear channel rating legally. So we were sent to the Boondocks to go to fish suppers and rotary dinners and stuff, which I loved. We both did. We both liked that, Bob and myself. So we'd be in the parades in Livonia and here and there, you know. And that was a great life. I liked that a lot. And we were on the radio together. Now, radio in those days did everything. I mean, from soup to nuts. We had, in the morning, Max Rainey and the High Boys with a band. We had, it was all talk, or entertainment of some sort, all day. Well, then the network began to back up and take up more time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had less local time. When television came in, they didn't go on the air till 7 or 8 at night. So you had to fill whatever you could of the daytime locally. And nobody was interested in the among the announcers. They all said, oh, television, I don't think so. I don't look so good, you know. And I was, 23 or something. I said, fine, I'll go. So they sent me to New York. And so when I came back, I was in the catbird seat. I knew what cameras to buy, where to place them, how kind of makeup you should use, how to put a script together, and so forth.
And this was as they're just building the studios over on Humboldt Street.
Just
we're hadn't just under
built
construction.
That yet. Yep, just were building it. So, and when they built that, it was very interesting. In the back of Humboldt Street, there's a big pit that goes down to the lowest floor.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about? There's a, oh, it's maybe 30 feet deep. That's where the stage door is, down at the bottom there. So if you had a car you wanted to demonstrate on TV, there was no way to get it in the door, of course, because it was 30 feet below. So nobody asked us how to build it. It's like today. Nobody asks the people who work someplace what they need.
I've always heard a story. There's the big studio over there, which is now where Channel 8 does its newscasts.
Yeah.
That was the radio studio for audience shows on radio. They were going to build a separate TV studio on the other side of the building that never materialized?
Never materialized, no. Well, because radio, when television came in, I don't think anybody knew how big it was going to be. I think, no, it was like when FM came in. Nobody realized it was going to amount to anything. And then it just burgeoned. It just went up fast. So we did all the daytime shows. So again, we pick off the radio now, Max Rainey and the High Boys, and put them in the morning, and we have Trudy McDonald cooking and Ann's Attic, and we fill all these spots to make money until the network comes in. All right, now the network started at 7 and went off at midnight, I think. Remember, you got the big, well, you don't remember, you're too young. But at the end of the day, you got the Star Spangled Banner or something in the big picture saying we're off. They began to back up. They took the 6 o'clock hour, the 5, the 4, so we're squeezed out. All right, now all these performers, Ross Weller and Trudy McDonald and Anne, what was her name? Well, I'll think of it in a minute. All of us.
Anne Rogers.
Anne Rogers,
yes.
Thank you. I went to school with her. Brilliant girl. Anyhow, we were all out of a job. So I couldn't be out of a job. I had children at that point, and I needed the money. So I said, well, how about the newsroom? I've worked in a school newspaper, and I can do it. So they said, okay. Again, I hit the jackpot. In the newsroom in those days were all the men who'd been fired from newspapers that folded. There had been 3 newspapers mm-hmm. here, now there's 1 or 2, I guess, still. So you had all these real old, crusty newspaper men, like Dave Kessler, who really knew New York State, knew Rochester, knew the news. They're in the radio newsroom. They weren't kids who just took a course at Syracuse University in communications. They were guys that were tested. So I learned from the best, and they were so good to me. I hear women say, well, men, stop you climbing. Well, I'm sure they do. But I have to say that I worked with men all my life. I was the only woman usually. And I must say, the men all helped me any way they could to be better. So I'm very grateful. That was just lucky. That was lucky.
We are talking with Rochester broadcasting pioneer Ann Keefe, who is back in town after a long and even more successful run in St. Louis, which we're going to get to in just a moment. So you ended up sort of finding your way into the newsroom, as a lot of people did in that era.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Wallace, who we think of now as being the consummate newsman, started off doing TV commercials.
We were all entertainers, yeah. Sure, or commercial people. And I loved the news. And news in those days was news. I mean, we taught you what the governor was doing to you and what the new tax rules mean to you. And then it became show business as it is now. It's all news, in my view, today, or virtually all, is, except for public radio, of course, and television. It's mostly the People magazine. It's the trials and the affairs and the whatevers of the people that people know. And you say, well, why are we looking at this? Who are the Kardashians? Well, they're just people. Well, no, but why do we have a series about them? Or Honey Baby Boo Boo. I mean, why do we have series on these people? Well, no, there's no reason. They're just celebrities. You are now somebody if your name is known. Not if you did anything, but if your name is known. Very strange.
How much technologically were you able to do? I mean, were you out shooting much news film at that point for TV? Was there much audio being gathered yet for radio, or was it mostly go out, find a story, and come back and read it?
In television, early television here, Charlie Plannert was my photographer. And I swear, we thought he lit fires because he always knew where the fire was before the fireman did. We always got there before the fire engine.
And he was here in this market almost to the point where I started doing TV news.
Was he? He stayed on. Yeah, yes, yeah. He stayed on a long time. He was a character. No, I went out, and the cameras were huge, if you remember. You had to carry them on your shoulder, and then if you were the reporter, you carried big bags with reels of stuff, and it was film. And if you lost your film, you had to go over to the other station and beg them to put your film through or give you the outtakes from their 6 o'clock news because you didn't have anything.
Once there finally was another station in town, which
yeah,
there wasn't
right.
For the first few years.
We were the only
years,
one
right?
For a long time. No, we did everything. But it was nice because it was like an old Judy Garland, Mickey Rooney movie. You know, I know where there's a barn. I got a brother-in-law who plays the guitar. You'd say to the boss, why don't we have a show about this? And he'd say, well, that's a good idea. Let's think about that. These days, nobody wants to know anybody's opinion on anything, you know? So it was like early showbiz. It was a great deal of fun. And all of us felt, I think, like we were in community theater.
And even while you were doing news, you were still also doing Dialing for Dollars, the home show, and
yep.
Sitting in occasionally for Romper Room, right?
I did. And I wrote commercials on the side, and I went back to school and got my master's degree. And I taught school in order to pay for the master's degree. And I taught school at Catholic schools to defray the tuition of some of my kids. And I was very busy.
263-9994 is our phone number here at 1370 Connection. And if you would like to talk to Ann Keefe, now is your chance to get those phone calls in and join us here on 1370 Connection. And if you'd be so kind as to put the headphones on there, we actually have a caller with a question about WHAM history. We have Jim in Canandaigua. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I just wanted to ask, I knew Mike Morgan as a musician in barbershop and knew him personally. He was a wonderful voice and he was a wonderful radio personality. And I wonder if Ann worked with him and knew him.
Yes, I know the name, dear. But, you know, I've been gone 40 years and you meet a lot of people in 40 years that sort of blank out. Even old husbands, I have a hard time remembering. I have trouble remembering their names, kind of. But I do remember Mike Morgan, yes, because of his musical. We had a lot of musicians in Rochester who were involved in broadcasting, both radio and television, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. We were saying before the show, too, that among the young kids who were getting started in the business when you were there, was a young guy named Don Elhart, who was in during the summer helping out, shooting film, and working in engineering at that
point. Yes, he worked as a technician. And I must say, technicians have always been good to me. Brother announcers have not been good. I must say that brother announcers, I think the attitude is, I am special as a broadcaster in TV or radio. And if a woman can do what I do, how special can it be? So, you know, a woman doesn't belong here. But the crew was always kind and good and helped you do stuff. And Al Hart was one of those. He worked as a technician at the old WHAM, or the old ROC. And we used to stand in the control room at lunchtime. We had Jeopardy every day, and my show was right after that. And so we'd stand in the control room and do Jeopardy. I want you to know that kid, he was probably 20, if that. He could answer anything in any category. He knew science. He knew sports. He knew cooking. I mean, there was nothing Don Allard didn't know. He's the smartest kid I ever saw. So I'm so happy to see that he stayed in the business, because we need a brain here and there.
He certainly did, and then some. And then some. Paul, you're next on 1370 Connection. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'd like to welcome Ann Keith back to Rochester.
Thank you, Paul.
And as a little kid, I remember Romper Room as well as Dialing for Dollars.
That's right. Well, see, I was telling Scott earlier, I was on a plane once, and a bald-headed man of his 50s probably was sitting next to me, and he said, oh, I remember you from Rochester. I was a little kid, and you were doing Romper Room. I said, thanks a lot.
And I got a surprise for you.
What?
I actually worked with your son, Peter.
Ah.
In 1971, we opened the Holiday Inn downtown.
Ah, what were you doing with Peter?
Well, he was a waiter and I was a waiter.
You were waiters. Ah, good for you.
And the last time I seen Peter was probably about 30-some years ago, walking down, I believe, Goodman Street.
Uh-huh.
Which may have been with his fiancée or his future wife. And I thought, gee, I've often wondered what happened to Ann Keith.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Well, thank you,
Paul.
And
here she is.
Peter was a golden boy. He's my oldest son. And I have three sons, and they all were the only boys that wore their own tuxedos to proms. And the reason they had tuxedos is they were all waiters. They all worked as waiters at one time or another. My kids all worked from the time they were maybe 15 at something.
Well, I remember him as being very, you know, very friendly and very outgoing and jovial.
Yes, wasn't
he
fun?
He had a great attitude.
Well, he went to Hollywood and did cartoons and Voltron. Denver the Dinosaur. And I was proud of him because he always made a moral in his comics. And he let women take main parts instead of it being all guys. Women had spacesuits too. And Peter was a dramatic, wonderful character who, as you may know, died of cancer in his early 50s, much to the heartbreak of us all.
Just a few years ago, very sorry about that.
Yeah, he made big, he was in Variety and Magazine, all the newspapers, New York Times wrote his obit. Yeah, he became quite somebody.
Well, who would have known that I was working with the future star back then?
Thank you. He was a nice kid. Yeah.
Well, I hope you enjoy your visit back here and have a great day.
Thank you.
All right. Paul. Thanks so much for the call, Paul. We appreciate it. We are talking with Rochester broadcasting pioneer Ann Keefe, and we haven't even gotten to St. Louis yet and that whole chapter of your career. Before we do that, David is in Henrietta with another early Rochester TV question. Hi, David.
And good afternoon to you. And I need a clarification, Ann, of my memory. I believe it was 1949 when the television came here. We had the first 7-inch Capehart in the neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And it was you and Bob, and there was no program. You were just talking. Then the set went blank, and Bob came on about 5 minutes later, and he was kind of laughing. He said, well, there's curtains near these cameras and the lights. I think they were carbon lights, so they were very warm.
Uh-huh.
So we were afraid they were going to catch on fire. Is my memory correct or not?
I don't remember, honey, but I'm sure that was possible. Those were early days. We didn't know what we were doing. Yeah, that's right, Bob. We had something called do-it-yourself.
It was interesting. We had half the neighborhood there. Everybody's looking.
Oh, I'm sure you had a household every time you turned your set on.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back to Rochester.
Thank you, my dear.
Okay.
Thanks so much for the call, David. I am so envious when I hear the stories from the people who were in that era and got to really build it from the ground up.
Yeah, David must have come from a rich family to have the first television in the neighborhood.
In 49. I don't think, I have to ask my dad, I don't think he had a TV quite yet at that point, I'm pretty sure. I don't think my mother did either.
Having a TV, Scott, in those days was like having a cottage in Canandaigua. People you never see all year just somehow happen to be going by your cottage at dinner time, don't they?
Right at the moment Milton Berle comes in.
That's
right?
Exactly right.
We are talking with Ann Keefe, and we want to sort of move the chapter forward. We get to 1975, and there's a strike that breaks out at Channel 8. You were involved in the union at that point, and you start looking to move on to the next chapter, and you thought you were going to Kansas City, right?
That's right. I've always been a strong union member. And what they wanted to do was Rustcraft, I think, but what they wanted to do was have a time clock. And if you were a reporter, for instance, and I needed you to cover a story today, I would call you up and say, today you're working. But I didn't give you a paycheck by the week. You got paid by the hour. And it was a steel manufacturer that owned us. And I said, that may work in a steel shop, but it doesn't work in broadcasting. I was furious. So we had a lovely strike. They never recovered from that strike, by the way, that station. At that time, this was a pretty strong union town. We had a lot of backing. And so I knew I wasn't going to be back in the catbird seat anymore after leading a strike. So I was going to Kansas City. I had a friend there who said that the Kansas City Star owned a TV and radio station. And he said, I don't know, I was 50. He said, I don't know if I can get you on camera, but I said, I don't care about being on camera. I'm perfectly happy back at the camera. I can do production. I can do writing. I can run a newsroom or work in a newsroom. So I was on my way out there, And I was staying with Sacred Heart Nuns at the university. And I got a call about 6 in the morning on a Saturday morning. And a voice said, this is Robert Hyland. Well, that didn't mean anything to me, so I said,
this is St. Louis, where you stopped for...
St. Louis. I was stopping there on the way to Kansas City. And he said, I'm very interested in hiring you. And I thought, who is this? And I said, well, for what? For my radio station. I said, I don't think radio can afford me. I'm sorry. And he said, and I had at that time, I don't know, 3 kids in college or something. And he said, I can afford anything. So I thought, oh, that's good. So he said, I'll send a car for you. I said, when? I said, what time is it? He said, it's 6:30. And I said, you're at your office at 6:30 on Saturday morning? Yes. I thought, this must be a good boss who's there Saturday morning at 6:30, for heaven's sake. So he said, I'll send a car for you. So I said, all right. When? He said, right now. It's on its way. So he had already said it before he even talked.
He already knew where you were.
Yeah, right. And he figured, I guess, if he said the magic word, KMOX, I had no idea what KMOX was. What did I know? I wasn't a big radio. Now I'm in television, remember, for a long time. Right. So I haven't even been in radio. So he sends a big limousine. And in the back, there is cold iced orange juice, a hot coffee, and fresh Danish. So I thought, this is a guy who knows how to treat a gal. So I interviewed him that day, and he was very anxious to hire me. And I thought, why is he so anxious? Well, it turns out that CBS, which owned the station, had said to him, you better get a woman on your staff, because we're getting a lot of pressure from Fair Employment. Why don't you have a woman? Well, I didn't know that, of course. So I thought it was just me. I thought it was my charm. So he said, well, let's hear what you sound like on the air. And I said, well, I'm on my way to Kansas City. Well, you can't go to Kansas City. We have to do this first. And I said, no, I've made an appointment. I have to go to Kansas City. And it was Saturday, as I say. So he said, well, what about tonight? Can you work tonight? So I said, yeah, I guess so. So I went in, and thank God, as I say, for the crew, the producer, the director, the board man, they were so nice, because I didn't know you had to push the calls in and do this and that. I didn't know how to do any of that, because I'd been in television where you don't have any of that. And so they were so nice to me, and I got through the night, and there was a big red phone on the desk, and that was his. And he called up and said, you're hired. And I said, wait a minute, wait a minute. A, I'm not looking for a job in radio. B, we haven't discussed money. Money is no object, he said. So I said, well, I'm going to Kansas City Monday. So I said, no, no, you're not. You're coming to visit me Monday. So I never did go to Kansas City.
And you stayed in St. Louis. And on the line with us from St. Louis is a former colleague of yours, Frank Abscher, is St. Louis's premier broadcast historian and has literally written the book on KMOX. Hi, Frank.
Hey, how are you, Scott?
I am well.
Good
am
morning, well. My dear. You're the official radio television wizard of St. Louis. Yes.
Oh, Lady Anne, it's so good to hear your voice.
Thank you. I miss you guys, I must say.
You know, Scott, this town had a love affair with this woman, and our loss is certainly your gain. But
well, I wanted you to set up, and I'm glad that you called in, because I wanted you to set up, you know, as much as people in Rochester knew and loved Ann Keefe, she really became a star in St. Louis, did she not?
She did. She was radio and television, and the lead columnist for the local daily newspaper wrote an article when it was found out that Ann was leaving town. And the article started like this. The second smartest person in St. Louis is getting a promotion because Ann Keefe is leaving.
Thank you. Well, listen, I was talking earlier, Frank, about how luck enters into show business. To be at the right place at the right time and have the right credentials, you know? And when I came to St. Louis, I had no idea how big KMOX was.
It was. It isn't anymore, but Ann was part of a dream team here, Scott. And I will say this, and you know, I love embarrassing Ann. She was the station's fixer. I may have been the utility man, but if a host's ratings began to sink, suddenly Ann would be paired up with that host to bring the ratings back up. And she worked just about every time slot you can imagine.
That's right.
She rode herd on the newsroom. She was the news director. I don't care what anybody says. This woman could outcuss a Marine drill sergeant.
True.
Yet nothing ever slipped out on the air. Some of the interns in the newsroom lived in fear of her. Most of us were in awe of her because she was, as you guys have so adequately noted, a Jill of all trades and could take anything that was tossed her way. I've got to say, as the station's historian, as the author who put the book together, there will never, ever be another Ann Keefe. She's the greatest.
Frank, I should have hired you.
Oh, I wouldn't work for those kind of wages.
No kidding. Frank Abscher on the
Thank
line with
you,
us from St. Louis, and Ann Keefe in studio with us back in Rochester from St. Louis. We have reclaimed her after a long and wonderful career here. I am Scott Feibusch, and in this hour we are talking with Ann Keefe, a legend of broadcasting here in Rochester and in St. Louis, too, where she had a long and wonderful career at a wonderful radio station, KMOX, and later on also in public television, and we'll get to that, too, at KETC in St. Louis. On the phone with us is Beth from Brighton. And, Beth, you knew Ann in St. Louis?
Well, I knew Ann here. I live in Brighton now, but I grew up in St. Louis, so it was delightful. Every time I came back home, which I consider St. Louis home, I got to hear Ann, and it was just wonderful. One, she's got the greatest voice next to mine. But I just all the wonderful memories of when Ann was on the radio in St. Louis, when I'd come home, I got to hear a voice I knew from Brighton and from Rochester, and he's done a great job, and here's to St. Louis, my hometown, and the greatest in the world, and the Cardinals, and all the other good things that happen in St. Louis. But
it's great
to have you back, Ann.
What do you attribute your great voice to? Mine's whiskey and cigarettes.
Probably the same. Probably the same.
We're the same generation, I can see that. Okay.
But it was so much fun to go home and hear your voice, and now I didn't know you were back, but I hope you'll stay on the radio somewhere in Rochester.
Thank you, my dear. No, I don't want to do it. I'm 88 years old. That's too old.
Come on. Hey, we're never too old.
Well, I just want to do nothing, which is, I must say, what I always wanted to do. You know, when you hear all the things I did in St. Louis and all the things
I think,
what was kind of moron was I to be doing those things? I'm the laziest person in the world. All I want to do is read a book. And I can remember my grandmother saying to me, for heaven's sakes, child, go out and play. You're so pale. But I didn't want to. I wanted to read Louisa May Alcott or something.
Well, you'll be pale up here, so.
Oh, yes, 6 months of winter.
After this winter we just had, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, it was unbelievable.
Thank you for calling, dear. I appreciate
it. I'm just glad to have you back, and I hope you'll be around town and so we can all hear you.
Thank you. Well, you'll meet me in the supermarket, probably.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure I will.
Okay.
Thanks so much, for the call, Beth. We appreciate it. I clearly have some catching up to do as far as whiskey, and maybe not cigarettes.
But, oh, no, you got to do whiskey and cigarettes.
We got the beer guys coming in next hour, so we're going to be talking beer next hour.
Beer is good, too.
We'll
beer
get
is good.
Going.
You know, women particularly have been my great audience because I was the first one to say, you don't have to vote the way your husband does or even think the way he does. You've got to know your husband, and if he's a certain kind of guy, you don't tell him what you think, but you have a right to think whatever you like. And if he's the kind of guy that'll take it, lay it on the line and say, wait a minute, there are two of us here. And women really appreciated that, you know. And also, I think I never knew the answer to anything. That's why I was a good broadcaster. I asked questions. Nowadays, everybody makes a statement, except you haven't done that. But now, isn't it true, Anne, that in 1952 you did blah, blah, and the guest can say yes or no? That's all, you know.
I've asserted that you're a broadcast legend in town, and you haven't denied me that. So.
No, indeed not. But with women, you know, they'd call and say, I'm home with three kids, and you're the only respite I have. I listen to you, and you give me hope. Because I keep saying, it'll pass, stick in there, it'll be all right. And what do you do about so-and-so? And I'd say, listen, if I knew what to do, I wouldn't have the rotten kids I have. So don't ask me, I don't know. And then my kids would all say, what did you say on the air today? Everybody's talking about
you
it.
Got one of them, you got one of them over in the corner of the studio
I
here.
Molly, my daughter that I live with here now, yes.
Yes, indeed.
Thank God. She's funny.
We are talking with Ann Keefe, Rochester and St. Louis broadcasting legend. Now, I got to ask you, say all you want to do is sit and read books, and you know, given my druthers, that's what I would do too.
Yes.
But isn't there something to be said for having that pulpit? Now, I've enjoyed it for this last month sitting here filling in for Bob, that if you find a book that's interesting and you want to spend some time talking to the author, you have that ability to say, hey, come in, let's talk for a while.
Well, I did it for 40 years. That's enough already. Mostly I talk to the TV. You've got to be kidding me. What is the matter with your brain? We pull out some old takes of what he said 6 months ago because it's not what he's saying now. That's my conversation these days.
In all those years of getting whoever was coming through Rochester, whoever was coming through St. Louis in there with you, what stands out as being the most interesting interviews?
I hated talking to stars because they're really mostly not very interesting people, which is why they're stars. I mean, movie stars. Theater star, they just giggle a lot and give you dumb, or they're insulted by your question, like, what do you mean by that? Well, I don't mean anything. So I don't like them. I like politicians. I'm big on politics. I don't side with any of them. I think they're all thieves and rogues, but they're interesting characters. I love authors, and I've done James Michener, and I have to tell you an author tale. This is to my embarrassment, but I'm going to tell you anyway. I was in Europe. I took tours to Europe so that I could go for free. So I went a couple times a year, and Mr. Hyland would let me go because he thought that was publicity for the station, okay? And he never wanted to go anyplace, so he was glad to have me go. So I was always nervous, though, because if he hired somebody good while I was gone, like as not, my office would be gone when I got back. And one of these times when I'd been away, the guest that they lined up for me that Monday morning, or afternoon, I was on 1 to 3 then, was Ann Perry. Ann Perry is a novelist who writes English mysteries, and I'm a big fan of Ann Perry. So I was tickled that she was going to be on. So I went on the air with her in our big studio, and we chatted about her portrayal of women in the 1990s. And her view of politics and her view of this and that. I thought it was a pretty good interview. So when I got off the air, I went through, walked through the newsroom to go to my office, and the kids in the newsroom all said, "Oh, God, Keith, you really did it this time." And I said, "What? What did I do?" And they said, "The phones are off the hooks here in the newsroom, and they're calling Robert Hyland, and the switchboard's going crazy." And I said, "What did I say?" Because I really didn't know what I said. Well, what I didn't know was, while I was in Europe, in all the newspapers, they carried the story about how Ann Perry and her childhood friend murdered the mother of the childhood friend in Australia where she lived, and that she had indeed gone to prison for that, or whatever you do with 14-year-olds in Australia. I didn't know that. So, of course, I didn't ask her about it. So it fell to two camps. One camp said, why didn't she talk about that? The other camp said, "That Lady Ann Keefe, what a wonderful person she is. She never even brought up that scandal and just talked to Ann Perry about what she should have." So I came out a winner, and the newsroom kids said, "Damn, Keefe, you did it again." So on my list of good luck.
We are talking with Ann Keefe about her long career in radio and TV here in Rochester and in St. Louis as well. And we go to the phones at 263-9994, and we say hi to Maureen. Hi, Maureen.
Hi, Scott. Ann, it's Maureen McGuire. And hi, Molly.
Hello, Maureen.
Oh, Molly says hello, Maureen. Hello, my dear.
I have to thank Maureen. Maureen, of course, is sort of your successor over at Channel 8, and she was the one, I think, who first got wind that you were back in town.
Well, she's the perfect anchor person, okay?
Oh.
No, you are. Look at somebody, anchor persons. They have their shirts cut down to their navels, or they have hair curling around their armpits, and they giggle and make little jokes. And no, you are a serious, charming but serious reporter. You know what you're doing. You know your business. You do a clean job. And you're to be recommended. And anybody here that travels to other cities, tune into your TV in your hotel rooms and see what their anchors look like, and you'll appreciate Maureen McGuire.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm glad I called. And listen, I wanted to tell you something. One of the things that was I interviewed you last year, and it was a dream of mine. I knew that you had been in St. Louis because I was in Columbia, Missouri, attending graduate school in the mid-80s. And, you know, I grew up watching you, but I had left Rochester in the early 80s. And there I am driving on I-70, and I see a billboard with your picture on it. And I had made no connection that you were even in St. Louis, so I was thrilled, of course.
The voice of St. Louis, they call it.
The voice of St. Louis. But, you know, and I always took it as a sign that I was on the right track because I was studying journalism at the time. But what I wanted to ask you, when you made this move to St. Louis, you were starting over in middle age.
Yes.
At a time when women really were still, you know, kind of entering into the broadcasting business. And I wanted to know if you were scared. Was that a scary thing for you or not?
Of course.
Or did you just feel confident?
No. I never felt confident my whole life. I would wake up every morning thinking, oh God, do I know enough to go on the air today? And who am I interviewing? Ooh, I'm not sure I can do it. No, I'm a very neurotic person. That's why the cigarettes and the whiskey, see?
A martini cuts the fear,
absolutely. So, no, I was 50, you're right, and I never was a pretty woman. Let's be honest here. I was a very ordinary-looking woman with an ordinary shape and an ordinary face, and I wasn't ugly, but I sure wasn't gorgeous. And they were hiring young, pretty women anchors, as you know. Mm-hmm. Older men are okay, but not older women. And I went to one man that a friend of mine in St. Louis sent me to, an alumnae of Sacred Heart, as a matter of fact. And he said to me, he was the head of a TV station, and he said to me, I like your tape. I think your credentials are impeccable. But he said, I'll be honest, if you repeat this, I'll deny it, but you're too old.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, I understand that. He said, but I'll tell you what, this man at KMOX is a crazy man, but if he hires you, And he'll do one of two things. He'll either fire you in the first 2 or 3 weeks, so don't buy a house or anything. Or he said you'll be a star, and he'll give you anything you want. If when he decides you're a star, then he'll pay you to be a star. So I said, okay. And he said, if he does the first and throws you out, I said, I can't do this. I'm bringing a high school kid with me. I've got 2 kids in college. He said, take a chance with him. And if he turns you down out, I will take you in. You won't be in front of the camera, but I'll find a place for you. And that gave me the courage to try it, Maureen, because otherwise I wouldn't have had the courage, no.
Well, I think you're extraordinary, and you've set the standard. And you know what? It's phenomenal to hear you on the radio. We ought to start a campaign to get you back on.
I'll be the first one.
Broadcast from your home, man.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be, you know what, Ann, if you want to talk about beer next hour with the beer guys, I'll go grab okay. some lunch. I would love to.
I'm a bit of an authority on beer. I might just there do that, go. Yeah. Well, and the funny thing, Maureen, about the age is that I was, as I say, 50 when I went there, and I was too old. All right, now go down the clock 30 years later, and I'm now, or 25 years later. I'm in my 70s now, and public television says we'd like, well, I was on a panel, a news panel discussion called Donnybrook, and it was like Meet the Press. So they said, we'd like you to do a show about health. And I said, okay, once a week, okay. Then we want you to do a show about conversations with famous people. Okay. So now I'm on pretty regularly, and I said, wait a minute. How come when I was 50, I was too old, but at 75, it's okay. I don't get it. And they said, well, you know, women get to a certain age, and then they're not women anymore. They're just sort of persons. Oh, I see. You become anthropomorphic or whatever that word is. And I couldn't believe that. But it was all right. I was just an old person then.
I just want to know, Maureen, you're talking about this question about was Ann scared to leave town. You're not hinting at anything, are you?
Yeah, right.
Not at all. But what I find wonderful and empowering about Ann's life and her story is that she constantly found a way to be open to new possibilities, age be darned, you know? And... Yeah. And that is, I think, the very definition of a great reporter, is just being open to what's in front of you.
That's right.
No matter what you're feeling, no matter what your own personal biases are, but just being open. And, boy, the world's better for having Ann in it, that's for sure.
So. Oh, you dear girl, thank
thanks
you,
so
Maureen.
Much, Maureen.
I appreciate it. Isn't that
well,
nice?
Well, thank you. It's been wonderful hearing you on the radio, Ann.
Thank you, dear.
Thanks so much for calling
in. Compliments from a colleague.
Absolutely.
Is
and one as talented as,
yes.
as Maureen, too.
Yes, exactly.
We have time to get one more phone call in here as we're running out of time with Ann Keefe here on 1370 Connection from WXXI. Lee, you're next.
Hi, Ann.
Hi.
I was wondering if you remember the very first weather lady on Channel 8.
The very first weather?
She replaced Bob Mills.
Yes.
Our producer, John Andrus, thinks he knows the answer. He says Marsha Ladendorf.
She looked like Marsha.
Ladendorf.
Yes. She looked like Sarah Fawcett. She was beautiful.
She
did not want to be a weather lady.
Wasn't real good at it.
No, well, she didn't want, she hated it. She wanted to be a reporter. And she, when they made her the weather lady, that was Don Keough. I loved him, the news director. And he said, you'll make more money, and you know, it's a better job. And she said, no, she didn't want to do it. And it was because she was pretty, beautiful.
Yes.
You know? And she said, I'm working on this great story about a mafiosa guy, and I've been drinking with him for a week to get the inside information, and I'm about to break this story. I don't want to do the bloody weather. So they said, well, you have to. So she did. So she left and went with CNN.
Yes.
She worked for Ted Turner's.
Did you notice in today's time, definitely here in Rochester, that they do not produce local, it's all news, it's not show. You remember the show with Tony DeFusto and Skipper Sam?
Oh, yeah, Tony DeFusto was a teacher at Brighton High.
Tony DeFusto was my middle school English teacher,
believe it or not. Okay,
so,
yeah.
Do you remember him
talk
doing
about
that
a small world.
Oh, I loved him. He was so sweet.
Is he still around?
I don't know.
I think he is.
He must be, because he was very young.
I should look him up. We should get him in here.
Say he must be young. He's probably 50, because as I say, I'm 88, so you know, he's probably 20 years younger than I.
It was 30 years ago that I had him as a teacher.
That's right. But I remember he went to England, and he came back, and he said, the kids here are so spoiled compared with the students over there and their behavior. Tony DeFusto, yes. And who else did you mention? Somebody like
Jim Connors. You remember Jim
Connors? Yes, okay.
The morning man who, during your strike, would do the news and weather and sports.
Oh, yeah. There were scabs who crossed our line.
Yeah,
I was not fond of them. No. One day when we were on the Union line, hot summer day, it was July, I think, and it was sweaty weather, and a guy pulled up in a city dump truck and hopped out of the cab, and he said to me, oh, what can we do for you? And I said, well, everybody's been kind. There are milkmen stopping by with ice cream sodas and stuff, and people are very good here. The hospital people, workers had helped us. And he said, well, I thought maybe you could use a pineapple. And he looks at the glass building behind me, which is ROC, and I thought, it's so hot. I said to him, I don't think so. We have no refrigeration stuff here, and a pineapple would go bad in no time. And he said, no, no. And he made a gesture of pulling the pin out of a hand grenade and throwing it into the building. I thought, oh, my Lord. So I said, no. This isn't that kind of a strike. No. But I remember that.
All right. Thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. We are down to just about our final 30 seconds here with Ann Keith. The hour's gone by far too fast. You really don't want to come back and do this? We really
can't
talk into
it. I don't want to do a thing, my dear. I don't even want to weed my garden, which needs it desperately. I just want to point and say, someone take care of those weeds. And my poor daughter ends up doing it, of course, you know.
We are very happy to have you back here in Rochester. We hope we can at least get you back here on the show at some point.
All right.
So many more stories to be told.